From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Monday, September 27th.
There are a lot of students for whom schools are home. And when they weren't able to access in-person learning, they lost all of those support systems.
That was Lauren Camera, senior education writer at U.S. News and World Report. She just came off a bus tour with Education Secretary Miguel Cardona. We'll talk about the lasting impact COVID will have on kids and education. But first, your morning headlines. We begin with COVID. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla spoke on ABC's This Week about his prognosis for when the pandemic will end.
I agree that within a year, I think we will be able to come back to normal life. I don't think that this means that variants will not be continue coming. And I don't think that this means that we should be able to live our lives without having vaccinations, basically.
Bourla also said that he expects Pfizer to submit child vaccine safety data to the FDA within the next couple of days. New York State is facing a severe healthcare worker shortage after it became clear that tens of thousands of healthcare workers will not meet today's mandated deadline for vaccinations. In a statement released on Saturday, Governor Kathy Hochul said that she's considering declaring a state of emergency. The executive order would allow qualified healthcare professionals licensed in other states or countries, recent graduates, and retired and formerly practicing healthcare professionals to practice in New York State. Other options include calling in medically trained National Guard members to help alleviate the healthcare worker shortage. Next to California, where 60 ships are docked waiting to be offloaded at two ports that move 25% of all of U.S. imports, Los Angeles and Long Beach. The problem stems from an increase in purchases, a decrease in workers, and confusion over making the ports a 24/7 operation. With the pandemic and its variants still spreading, U.S. consumers have continued their purchasing spree, buying goods ranging from appliances and home exercise equipment to sweatpants and toys. Volume at the Port of Los Angeles is up 30% for the year. Shipping delays are already having an impact on stores. Nike says that they won't have enough sneakers to satisfy demand this holiday season. Costco announced that it is limiting the purchase of paper towels, bath tissue, and water due to supply chain issues. And the price of artificial Christmas trees has jumped 25% this year due to higher shipping costs. We end in Germany, where elections for chancellor are underway. After 16 years in power, Angela Merkel will be stepping down. While final results are not expected until later tonight, preliminary vote tallies show a tight race between the center-left Social Democrats and the center-right Christian Democratic Union for first place. A win by the Social Democrats would be a hit to Merkel, who led the Christian Democratic Union during most of her years in power. Merkel leaves office with high marks among voters, so much, in fact, she likely would have won a fifth term had she sought it. Merkel, who's a trained quantum chemist, is also the first head of the German government to voluntarily step down since 1949. And now to our daily deep dive. The pandemic has been difficult for all of us, especially students in K-12. Most students fell behind in math and reading. Many suffered the consequences of limited socialization. For parents with young children at home, the impacts were physically and mentally devastating. Can we recover? Today, we're talking with Lauren Camera, a parent and senior writer at U.S. News and World Report. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Rena.
So I'm so excited because you have just come off of a bus tour with Education Secretary Miguel Cardona. Tell me what he's saying.
Yeah, so the Education Secretary, this is sort of a ritual that they have every year that school reopens, where they go on this back to school bus tour. Of course, this is a year like none other because we are coming into school during a pandemic as we have the last couple of years. So this is the first back to school bus tour we've had in a while. And his job is really twofold. He's trying to both cheerlead the public school system. This is the first time since the pandemic shuttered all schools in March of 2020. That we've had 50 million children in school at the same time, learning in person. This is a really big deal. And for the most part, it's working. But at the same time, there are a lot of states and school districts that aren't doing everything that they can, in his view, to keep kids safe. So whether that is not implementing mask mandates in school, not testing, not requiring staff to be vaccinated, his job is to cheerlead those doing the right thing in his view, and then also try to push those who aren't doing everything they can to do more.
You know, it's fascinating. I live in Connecticut, and Miguel Cardona was the head of schools here in Connecticut.
That's right.
And pretty remarkable. I mean, our schools were up and running. We had laptops. The public schools felt like they were private schools. And he was able to get this up and running in a very uncertain period where we didn't know, is it the right thing to put kids back in school, which we now know it really is for their mental health. What is his focus right now? What is he most concerned about in the middle of this pandemic and education in America?
I think all school leaders across the country felt really good going into the summer that school would be able to open without massive hiccups, right? The Delta variant really spiked a lot of well-laid plans that superintendents had for reopening just by how highly contagious it is. And so Secretary Cardona is, again, trying to push those states who aren't doing everything to continue doing the right thing by putting more mask mandates in place and other risk mitigation strategies. But the highly contagious Delta variant is really breaking through even some of the best well-laid plans. And so what he is focusing on right now is trying to get as many children who are eligible to be vaccinated, as well as to push educators to be vaccinated. And right now we know approximately 90% of them already are. So the biggest problem is these elementary age children. You're seeing rolling closures, classrooms being dismissed for weeks at a time, students having to quarantine for up to 2 weeks. And so even though not many schools have closed, about 2,000 schools out of 98,000 in the country have closed, there's still a lot of children missing out on school. And so the secretary is looking especially to potentially FDA's forthcoming emergency authorization use of the Pfizer vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds as sort of this breakthrough moment, is what he told me. It could be a potential game changer for being able to keep schools open.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, and it's also interesting for people who don't know Miguel Cardona. He wasn't a guy who grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. We're seeing such a divide right now of kids who are privileged and are getting better education and those whose families are really struggling. Has he talked about how he's going to bridge that divide of education in America?
He is really focused on this issue. And also the Biden administration writ large has been trying to focus on this. So one of the things he is doing out of a lot of different strategies he's trying to put into this is focusing the federal aid that states got from the various COVID relief packages and trying to target those to the children who missed the most school or are furthest behind. And that has historically been some of our most disadvantaged students. So whether that's Black students, Hispanic students, low-income students with disabilities, students who are experiencing homelessness, he is trying to target those resources through different formulas that get to the most underserved students. That's one of the things he's trying to do.
What do you think some of the long-term effects of this pandemic will be on our children's education in America?
Wow, that's a big question. It could go two ways. It really could. What the secretary is trying to do is push schools to not just return to normal, but to reimagine education writ large so that those students who have historically not gotten great education, those students who our public school system has left behind, get a chance. And it's a big task. I don't know if every school district is up to it. And that's what he's trying to highlight. There's schools that have stood up summer school programs. There are school districts where kids have been in school since last year, putting into place all the safety mechanisms, hiring more nurses, hiring more school counselors, trying to get parents involved, trying to make sure kids are fed, teachers going door to door, trying to welcome students back who they never heard from at all the previous school year. So there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of effort going in to making sure coming back after 18 months. So it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. When you talk about kids with disabilities, those kids that are struggling that might not have got the help that they needed because they were learning remotely, Is there a strategy to deal with those kids who need the help?
Yeah, this is something that everyone is really concerned about right now. Students with disabilities are more at risk for severe infection if they are infected with COVID. So most of them have not been able to go back to school until very recently. And even now, there are a lot of parents who are struggling with sending their students with disabilities back to school, especially in school districts that are not taking COVID seriously, that do not have mask mandates. The Biden administration is trying to push where it can on this. Their Office for Civil Rights has opened up 6 investigations into states where governors or state legislatures have banned school leaders from requiring masks. They're trying to sort of use all the levers they can to argue that if you cannot keep your students with disabilities safe, then that goes against federal law. Federal law, you know, allows students with disabilities a free and appropriate education alongside their peers without disabilities. And if you aren't putting in the safety protocols to keep them safe and they cannot go to school, then that violates their civil rights. So they're looking into that now, but it is a major problem. There are some school districts that are trying to pour more money into their special education programs to provide at-home services, to provide one-on-one tutoring, to hire more special education aides to help.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lauren Cameron, senior writer at U.S. News and World Report on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from the Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm joined by Lauren Cameron, senior education writer at U.S. News and World Report. We're talking about COVID's impact on education. So according to a McKinsey study, without any intervention, the pandemic could actually reduce lifetime earnings for K through 12 students by an average of $50,000 to $60,000. And if you're Black or Hispanic, that impact could be even worse. Tell me more about this.
Black and brown students by far missed the most in-person school during this pandemic. Millions of them did not step foot in a school until very recently. And when you look at the education department's data on who received in-school education and who didn't, they are by far the group that did not receive it. By the end of the last school year in some urban districts, I think Atlanta was one of them, there were upwards of 70% of kids who never went back.
70%. I mean, that is a shocking number.
Yeah.
What happens? Are they tracking those kids? What happens to them?
So, yes, they are. The school district itself is trying to track those kids, especially the ones who never logged on even to the virtual programming. There's been a huge effort underway in a lot of cities across the country over the summer to re-engage those students, to bring them back to school. But like you said, there is a large task ahead. And this is what the secretary is hoping, keeping his fingers crossed, school districts will do with the federal relief aid that they've received, upwards of $190 billion, to try to get back on track.
I want to go back to vaccines for a second. It looks likely we'll have vaccine approval for kids 5 through 11, that age group. What impact do you think that'll have on education, that these kids can get vaccinated?
Yeah, so he told me that this would absolutely be a game changer. The promise of vaccinations for 5 to 11-year-olds means they would be able to pivot and focus on what they really need to be focusing on. I've heard pediatricians, infectious disease experts say the same thing, and that would really allow school to feel like school. You can go to band practice, you can play sports, you can do your theater. It would allow students to forget a little bit that they're still in a pandemic, right? And get back to being kids and being students.
I'm curious, Lauren, you know, when we were learning virtually, we've now realized the mental health impacts on children of staying at home. Nearly a quarter of all parents whose kids attended school partially or fully remote reported seeing mental or emotional problems in their kids. Do we know why we saw such a dramatic rise in that for the kids who stayed home?
There has absolutely been a mental health spike. And a lot of that has been because they felt the stress that parents felt. I mean, they're experiencing what we are experiencing. If your parent is struggling to maintain a job in an uncertain economic workspace, if you're in an intergenerational household and you're afraid your grandparents are getting sick. You have to remember there are millions of students whose family members died. And that's incredibly traumatic experience for everyone. Schools are not just places of academic learning. They provide a whole host of mental health supports for students, especially for students experiencing homelessness, LGBTQ students. There are a lot of students for whom schools are home. And when they weren't able to access in-person learning, they lost all of those support systems. And that's what we're seeing right now. And that's why the secretary is trying to focus so much on resuming in-person and not just reopening, but being able to stay open.
We're going to pause, take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Lord Camera, senior education writer at U.S. News and World Report on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. We're here with Lauren Camera, senior education writer at U.S. News and World Report, talking about COVID's impact on education. I know over the course of my education, teachers have been so transformative in my life. And I had a stable, wonderful, warm home. And I think about those kids. I think about the child abuse cases that went unreported because the teachers weren't there to physically witness it. But we're also seeing, you know, when you look at high schoolers, there's a drop in people going on to college as well. How is that going to affect our country?
So this is a really interesting question. I asked the secretary about this on the bus, actually. As you might know, Rena, the applications for federal student aid have dropped to their lowest point ever. This is sort of like a bellwether. So you see those federal student aid applications drop, and you know you're going to have a big problem with low-income students accessing higher education. One of the things the secretary is really trying to do is sort of shift or scramble the higher education landscape. You can go to community college for free in a lot of states already. He's trying to lift up the promise of these sort of smaller credentials. So whether students want to go directly into a career from high school, apply to a job training program that not only is free, but then if you do well in it, provides almost a guaranteed job, or whether you want to springboard after your 2 free years of community college into a 4-year degree, this is how he's trying to rethink.
He's got a tall task here. I mean, it's a pandemic. We've seen these trends that you've laid out, very realistic, not rosy, pretty gloomy picture, if I'm being honest. But even before this pandemic, the U.S. education system has been far behind so many in the developed world. How do you ever catch up? How do we improve education in America if we are already so far behind and declining?
So I think it's a big question, frankly.
It is. In fairness, it's a huge question I've just laid on you. But it is, Lauren, I will say it is something that weighs on me because we've seen the decline. Are we just too far gone at this point to make a difference?
I would say no, absolutely not. I think the biggest problem you're seeing right now is on some of these state exams, especially where the results are coming out from the lowest achieving students are doing worse and worse. And there's a lot of effort in the K-12 space right now to focus on those lower achieving students, figure out how you can bump that up. Because right now, I mean, as you said, before the pandemic, there was already an enormous achievement gap. The pandemic exacerbated that because those who were lowest achieving already typically got fewer in-person hours, and that has resulted in them, their achievement lowered again. A lot of resources through various federal formulas, a lot of pressure by the Biden administration for states to focus on those districts with the most underserved students. But it's an enormous task. It's an enormous question. You know, we've been talking about what the education secretary is doing, but realistically, an education is a very locally controlled issue. The federal government really only provides about 8 to 10% of all school budgets. The rest come from state and local districts. So it's really up to them.
Such a good point. So I do want to end on a positive note. I know we've gone through a lot, but is there anything good that comes out of this pandemic for kids with regards to education?
Yeah, I do. I think that you're going to see a lot more parent involvement. One of the things that I've come to realize through a lot of my reporting is that when the pandemic started and schools were asked to be everything for students, they were asked to really step up and do a lot more for students than they ever have. A lot of principals want to keep doing those things. In the K-12 space, there's a term called community schools, which is really a term that means a school that takes a holistic approach to raising a child. You're educating them, but you're also a space where they can have healthcare, dental work, mental health care. Do they need clothes? Here's a place you can go and get a jacket or some shoes. Do you need to take some dinner home? Step into the food pantry we have. There's going to be a lot more effort to embrace the whole child and just not their academic side. And you're seeing that already, not only in principals and school leaders wanting to do that, but in state budgets. In California, for example, just passed upwards of $1 billion for the model of community schools. And it hopes to try to eventually turn every single school more than 80% of the students live in poverty into this model. And so I think coming out of it, that's definitely one positive thing you'll see.
Lauren Camera, senior writer at U.S. News and World Report. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rena.
And now to our look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today. The Senate will convene and resume consideration of a bill to extend government funding until December 3rd. The bill narrowly passed the House last week in a 220 to 211 vote. Senate Democrats need to recruit Republican support to keep the government open after the debt ceiling is breached on October 1st. The Landsat 9 satellite launches into space today aboard a United Launch Alliance Atlas rocket. This will be the 9th joint mission between NASA and the U.S. Geological Survey. The Alliance has provided constant imagery of Earth for nearly 50 years. On board with the Landsat 9 are four other CubeSats, or miniature satellites, which will be used for other purposes. Two will study the solar wind and exoplanet atmospheres. The other two are flying undisclosed missions for the U.S. Space Force, a branch of the military established in 2019. The Metropolitan Opera opens this week with the premiere of Terrence Blanchard's Fire Shut Up in My Bones. This is the very first opera written by a Black composer to be performed at the Met. We leave you with baritone Will Liverman, starring as Charles, singing Bend, Don't Break.
My roots run deep. I bend, I don't break. I'm a man.
Have a great day, everyone. I'll see you back tomorrow morning. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Lauren Camera for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and do leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.